everybody, Scott Burnside back for the first Two Man Advantage podcast of 2021. Oh my gosh, what a year it's going to be. It's already been a year of great change. As you know, I live in Georgia. Pretty important political day. The day
right.
before.
Congratulations.
Oh my
Congratulations.
God. Yeah, not to get too political about it, but that was a pretty damn fine night for the folks of Georgia, if I do say so myself. I feel pretty optimistic about that. And, I was going to just start the podcast with some USA chants, after the World Junior Gold Medal game. But, I just think, I'm going to be a kinder, gentler Scott Burnside in 2021. Let me ask you, what'd you make of that gold medal game? I thought it was off the charts, exciting, but it's still, I always feel a bit sorry for whoever loses in the gold medal game with the World Juniors, but especially on those occasions when Canada does lose, because it's such a huge deal in your country.
Yeah, as you know, because you actually are Canadian, so I know you like to play the fake American, but... No, it's obviously a bigger deal in Canada. And that's what I hope that, the Americans now have 4 gold medals in this tournament in the past, I think, 10 or 11 years. Mm-hmm. I hope that the awareness of this tournament grows in the U.S. and not just among the diehard hockey fans. I don't know if it's because a tournament needs to be on another network other than NHL Network, maybe, to grow.
Yeah.
But there's this sense, even during this tournament, that the TV ratings obviously through the roof on TSN in Canada, but through the roof in Sweden, Finland, right? Saw some of the reports. I don't know that you get the same sense in the U.S. What? And I keep thinking, is it just the U.S. program continuing to grow and develop these amazing elite athletes that it's going to take to raise the awareness level of this tournament beyond the diehards? I mean, and you tell me, you live in Atlanta, but it just feels like it's still within a tight bubble that Americans care about this tournament.
So, well, I have to tell you, because my cable carrier doesn't carry NHL Network. So, so I watch a lot of my NHL hockey through NHL Live, but it doesn't pick up the NHL Network. And so, thank goodness I have a very smart teenage son in the house, and he was able to find the games basically pirated. And so we were watching a pirated feed with these, and they were like, asking for donations for beer. And I assume it was a Canadian guy. Like it was great. And it was great because I got to hear Gord Miller and Ray Ferraro. And like, it was outstanding. But I think your point is an excellent one. It's such an important tournament. And especially, in terms of, you looked at the kids that were in that gold medal game and how many of them, we may see some of them in a matter of weeks playing in the NHL, but
And that was an amazing team, Canada. Like, obviously, they'll remember that they lost the gold medal, but they should not hang their heads. That was a spectacular team. But just a clutch, perfect technical performance by Team USA. I tweeted this on, I don't know what day it is anymore. I tweeted this Tuesday night, I guess, after the game, but. It's funny, you said a riveting game. I don't know that it's been as riveting as other gold medal games that I've seen, but technically a flawless defensive effort by Team USA. I mean, so much of the commentary was on Spencer Knight, and yes, he made a number of amazing saves, especially in the third period. But really the story, if you really look at it objectively, was sort of the fortress that the Team USA built around him. And the difficulty, I mean, Canada had the puck the whole third period. I don't know if the U.S. went and got into the Canadian zone. But they didn't, but despite having the puck, they didn't really get into the money area. And I just think that the defensive effort, and it's not just the D, it's as I said, the 5-man units. It was spectacular. I mean, it's not the most exciting thing to watch, but from a granular perspective, just a flawless defensive effort by Team USA against a team that should have beat them. And for that, all you can do is tip your hat. That was just wonderful to watch, from a total neutral perspective. That was amazing defensive work by Team USA.
Yeah. I thought the first 40 minutes, frankly, were outstanding. And it was sort of, punch, counter punch. But I thought that Team USA had Canada on their heels, frankly, for a lot of those first two.
A good stretch,
Of course, scoring that early second period goal to go up 2-0. I mean, that really allowed the Americans to play, as you point out, maybe a little bit different style, didn't have to risk as much. So it was fun. And
we should mention too, since I'm not part of the World Junior Broadcast, I'm not patting myself on the back here, but I do work at TSN. But if you knew, and I only know some layers to it, it is unbelievable that TSN pulled this off. A World Juniors in the middle of a pandemic, no fans, a bubble, flying the teams in from all over the place. Obviously, the IIHF and TSN working on this together. It's amazing that the broadcast work and the way it looked and how it got. I mean, all the behind the scenes work. I mean, there were a lot of tweets about it last night, but I just tipped my hat to a lot of my colleagues at TSN as well. It was spectacular. I mean, it really was one of the great feats of the year for that World Juniors to have been pulled off broadcast wise. It has to be said.
Well, and I think you're right. And really, you think about how it started, you know, a bunch of positive tests. Remember, the Canadian team was quarantined for a time during their, what would have been their training camp. I think a lot of people were quite pessimistic that it was ever going to happen. And you're right. And it did, you know, they got over those early missteps and the tournament was great. And there were some, you know, some lopsided games and, you know, that happens, you know, it happens all the time with the women's international play. It happens when we, you know, even at the Olympics with best on best men, it happens less, I think, than maybe in the past, but these things are going to happen. But I thought the level of competition was outstanding. And, you know, the Finns coming back to beat Sweden and really.
That was the best game of the tournament.
Yeah. Even the Finns coming back and really, you know, putting a scare into Team USA. You talk about, you know, Team USA not having the puck until the very end when they ended up scoring the winning goal to go to the gold medal game. You know, in the Canadian dominance, I know leading into that gold medal game, people were sort of comparing that junior team to the Canadian Olympic team in Sochi, which you and I, of course, covered, might have been the greatest defensive effort.
That was pretty surgical, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But I think there were really people amazing who were drawing parallels, and it was, you know, a testament to that Canadian team until last night. So, good.
Yeah, and the other thing I want to point out, and again, this is more of a Canadian thing, I think, but it amazes me, and it's anecdotal, it's people in my life and around me, but it's amazing to me how many people don't actually care that much about the NHL, or at least on a consistent basis, who will not miss a World Junior game.
Right, yeah.
Like the World Junior, and maybe the Olympics are that way, right? But, like, you know, my wife didn't miss a single Canadian game. She will not watch 3 NHL games this year.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay? It's like that across a broad spectrum of where the World Juniors touch, just hit more levels of and bring in more, you know, non-year-round fans for whatever reason. And I think it's the time of the year, the tradition, you name it. But, I think the Olympics do a lot of that too, right? Where you're drawing in to other people. But that's an interesting thing too, because I feel it in my household where Canada's playing, where it's like now the NHL starts next week and, you know.
Yeah, it won't be.
My oldest daughter will want to watch a bunch of NHL games, but that's about it in my household.
Do your kids, you know, feed off that? Like, are they part of that? Oh my gosh, it's World Junior time. Like, would they follow it in a way?
Yeah, they were into it the whole couple of weeks. Yeah. It was terrific. And I think that's what I mean. That's what has seeped into this country over the years with the whole tradition.
Yeah. Well, you know what? This is a perfect segue to our guest on Two Man Advantage today. And you mentioned excitement in gold medal game. And I'm not sure that the gold medal game in which John Carlson scored the overtime game winner against Canada back in 2010, that might have been one of the greatest gold medal games, at least one in my memory, and just, you know, such a dramatic finish. And of course, you know, it was great to catch up with John Carlson because, a lot of time has passed, right? But it's still a memory for him that even though we talked before the gold medal game, the entire World Junior experience to him was really meaningful. So it was great to catch up with him. We, of course, chat about his new teammates, Zdeno Chara, disappointing playoff exit at the hands of the Islanders. So without further ado, my friend, why don't we listen to my conversation with John Carlson? an absolute treat to start off 2021 as we are joined by Washington Capitals defenseman John Carlson. John, we got a lot to unpack. You and I haven't chatted in a while, and I just want to warn you at the end of this conversation, I will quiz you on the four new divisional names that the NHL announced today with the naming rights. So if you need to do some research while we're chatting, are you okay with that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, if I don't do research, I'm probably going to go over, but either or, I'll give it my best shot.
All right. Well, you got lots of time then. But before we get to the quiz at the end of this, and there's so much to talk about with the Washington Capitals and your off season, but my timing is impeccable. It's not usually my strong suit. But as you and I are taping this in less than 12 hours, we will know who the new World Junior Champions are. And of course, that's a tournament that is, well, in some ways, you are a legendary figure in the World Junior Championship, having scored the overtime winner and a 6-5 victory for Team USA over Team Canada, which of course is this year's matchup in the final as well, back in 2010. And I don't know whether it comes up for you every year at World Junior time, John, or if you think about it, where those sort of memories fit in for you in terms of your career. But it seems like a long time ago, but when I see the replay of it, it feels like it just happened yesterday. I'm not sure how it is for you.
Yeah, I don't think it feels that long ago for me. I think, hearing the amount of years ago it was, then it seems long. But, it's kind of just a progression of my career and obviously a big step for me. So it was, maybe that's why it doesn't seem like that long ago for me. But it's a great rivalry. I'm excited to watch the game tonight. I haven't seen probably as much of this World Juniors as I have in the past, just with the craziness of everything that's going on and getting back into camp and all that. But I'm really looking forward to spending some time on the couch tonight.
Yeah. Is there a way to describe how important your experience at that tournament was for you? I mean, you won a Stanley Cup, you've gone to the Olympics, All-Star Games, all those kinds of things. But I wonder where that World Junior experience fits for you and maybe, how important it was for you in helping you step into your life as an NHL player.
Yeah, I think it's really memorable because I did, score in overtime. I think that part of it, means a lot to me from a personal perspective, I would say. But I think just the timing of it was important for my whole career. I had some success. I played a few NHL games at that point, was playing in Hershey. So I was kind of on the cusp of making it to the NHL. And, I think that gave me a lot of confidence. It maybe, boosted what other people thought of me too. Kind of joining the league at the time, soon after that. So I think just from a progression, it was very important to stepping in, feeling confident, feeling, like I can contribute and be with the big club. And that's kind of shortly thereafter, I was finishing out the season here in Washington.
You have teammates now with Washington who, you've played with internationally, guys like TJ Oshie or whatever on the U.S. side of things. You have teammates who are, of course, Canadian. I think, guys like Tom Wilson. Is it still like at practice, as you begin your training camp, getting ready for 2021 and all that is strange about that, does it still come up in conversation? Like, is it still one of those dressing room things? Because I know in a normal course of a regular NHL season, my sense is that there's a lots of back and forth, regardless of which country you come from within the NHL locker room, or has that changed a bit?
No, I think if anything, there's probably more of it just with how many different kind of countries we have represented in a big way. It's not just one or two guys. I think in the past year or two, it's probably the least amount of Canadians that we've ever had in my career anyways. And obviously a lot of Swedish players, Russian, and the list goes on. So I think there's more badgering because someone's always playing someone, you know, not just one or two teams are being rooted for at this time of year.
Yeah. So what's it been like to come back and start your training camp basically on the dawn of 2021? It's been a weird off season. It's obviously a chaotic time around the world. What was it like for you, John, in terms of, you know, how you spent your off season at a time when you're normally getting ready to start a new season, and wondered what that was like for you and your family, and sort of walking through the door to get ready for this 56 game season? Was the process different for you? Do you feel different about it, or what's that been like for you?
Yeah, I think it's totally different. I think, you know, plus we've kind of had a couple experiences like this where, you know, we got shut down, we started training a little bit, we went into a short camp and we started in the bubble, and then kind of reset that, and then the ranks didn't open until a certain time again, and it was a longer drawn out progression this time, but at least we had already kind of been through that. And I think finding a routine was more important, but also harder, just based on everything that's going on and the challenges and hoops that you have to jump through in order to do things safely and come into the rink. You know, it's not whenever you want. It's pretty open. Everything here is great for us, but on a normal off season. But this season, off season was a lot different, and just trying to find a different routine that, you know, obviously we're still people. We have things to do at home. We have people to take care of, and finding the right routine was important for me. And I think I've, you know, this time around did a lot better job with that, and made it a little bit easier. But at the end of the day, we haven't been on the ice too much, more than 8 guys, 6 guys, 10 guys. So I think when you get out there with 20, 23 guys, it seems crowded out there, and you got, you know, 10 days before your, you know, the real stuff starts. So I think it's very important to, you know, come into camp where you need to be, but also to really use these 10 days because things are going to happen quickly.
Yeah. Do you think the fact that, you know, you play in the bubble in Toronto, you know, you're in the round robin and then play the Islanders, it's over in 5 games. Is it easy to put that aside because it was so different, because the environment was so alien to what you're normally going through during an NHL playoff season? Or do you carry a kind of a chip on your shoulder after, you know, it was a pretty disappointing, you know, sort of outcome for you guys. And I wonder, you know, how do you internalize that as you come into 21 now, in terms of how, you know, whether you use it or whether you try and forget it?
No, I think you definitely use it. I think, you know, obviously it's different and something no one's ever been through, but at the same time, you can kind of go down the rabbit hole on any year. Oh, you know, we got unlucky here. Or this guy got hurt here. Or this guy, you know, I didn't make a good play here. Or he didn't make a good play there. I think you can always go down that route and find everything that could possibly have went wrong that went wrong and it didn't turn out the way you wanted. Or, you know, you use it as a, you know, like you said, a chip on the shoulder. Or use it as a teaching moment on, what didn't feel right, what felt abnormal when we did have success, you know, what did that feel like? And you kind of build off of that. So yeah, I would say you throw all of the abnormalities about it away and focus on us coming way short of our goal and how that feels and how that sits with you and make adjustments for this coming season.
Yeah. You have experience. We go back to the 12-13 season. You end up with 48 games after a lockout that basically cost half a season. So you have a sense of the dynamics. Is there something when you look around that Caps room and say, you know what, I think we're built for this kind of dynamic, because the 56 games is going to create things, urgency or whatever it is, it's going to be different than 82 games. What do you like about your team in this kind of situation says, okay, we can get up and we can get rolling quickly, or whatever it is. What do you like about that squad coming into 56?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is just the feeling right now. I think everybody's come back and ready to go. That's how it feels like. That's kind of how we've been practicing the first couple days, and that's important. The mental aspect of any season is, I think, the most important. And certainly with this one, the start is probably the biggest thing to wrap your head around, because things go south, and you know that you don't have as much time to make stuff up as you normally would. So I think we're definitely focusing on that. But I think just the overall feeling of the players, and you know, kind of like the last question, I think we're all hungry to get back out there and prove ourselves and how we feel, you know, about ourselves and each other in terms of what we're capable of, and getting another chance to do it the right way.
Yeah, some interesting changes around the Capitals, of course. I'm not sure, you know, if you had a relationship with Peter Laviolette, who, of course, takes over as head coach, if you knew Peter before, or if you've had a chance to, you know, sort of talk with him about, you know, how he might be doing things differently, or how you can achieve what you want to achieve, especially early in the season. Do you have an early vibe from Peter Laviolette?
I think he's been great so far. I've met him. He was on the staff in Sochi, so I have some prior experience with him. Albeit he wasn't the head coach there, but you know, I feel like I have some common ground with him from that. But yeah, we've changed a few things. Nothing that foreign, but just slight adjustments, slight changes, and just that another great voice that's been around a long time that can you know, teach anybody that's been in the league, you know, a month or 20 years. So I think he's bringing a new flavor to our team. And I think kind of his mantra of fast and physical and on top of people, that's kind of what we're going to be gunning for out of the gates here.
Yeah. I don't know what, you know, if you guys spend a lot of time looking at the revamped divisions and you look at that East, and man, it's it looks on paper like it's going to be a bear almost every night. And you have a new guy who's going to suit up on the blue line with you in Zdeno Chara. And I wonder, when you first heard the news that that Zdeno was going to be joining the Capitals, what sort of goes through your mind, and what kind of, you know, what kind of presence or role do you think he brings to this team?
Yeah, I think he's going to be an important piece. I think, you know, they wouldn't bring someone in with his stature and experience to, you know, to not contribute in a big way. And I think I was excited when I heard about it. I think anytime you can be around a guy like him with his stature and experience and success that he's had over his career, to just learn from him day to day is going to be huge for all of us here. And certainly as a defenseman, going to be big for myself as well.
Now, defensemen don't often talk about, oh, I had a battle with this other defenseman, but have you had experiences on the ice, and whether it's internationally, whether it's during the course of your NHL career, have you had moments on the ice with Zdeno where you're like, okay, I remember that. I'm not going to forget that.
Yeah, so maybe not as much of, you know, puck battles in the corner or anything like that. There was one time, I think it was my first or second year, that I think it was a penalty kill, and he actually, I blocked a shot from him, and he snapped my my shin pad kneecap in half. So that's that was definitely a run, and I do always remember.
Well, I wonder if you kept it. It's one of those things that might be a keeper, but
yeah, I wish I had it. I have him sign it, put it on my wall or something.
John, last year, when I think about, you know, I actually was able to connect with you guys during your dad's trip in Tampa and spent some time with you and your dad, and what a, you know, what a fabulous season, right? 15 goals, 60 assists. You lead the NHL among defensemen in both those categories. And I did not realize this until the unbelievable Washington Capitals PR staff sent this along, but 213 points for you over the last three seasons, first among all NHL defensemen. And I wonder, you know, when you look back on that, do you take some satisfaction, even though you fell a little bit short in the voting for the Norris to Roman Josi in Nashville? Or does it, are you like, well, I, honestly, at this stage, all I want is another ring? Or I wonder how you marry those two things, those really impressive personal stats, which are critical, and the other stuff, the stuff that, you know, as you mentioned earlier, that you guys fell short in losing the first round to the Islanders. How do you marry those two things?
Yeah, well, I think there's a human element to everything, and that's goes without saying. Everybody likes to have some recognition of accomplishments, but I would say as a competitor and kind of where I am, I just want to win, and that's really all that matters to me. And so maybe down the road when you retire, you might think back more on importance of those things, but certainly, you know, like right now, training camp, and we're getting going and wanting to start competing again, that's really all you're focused on. And throughout the year, that's all you're focused on, is just trying to find ways to, you know, better yourself to have success as a team. And I think if you take care of that mindset, then the personal achievements kind of go alongside with that.
Yeah. You have two boys. Where are
three,
they
at? Three now.
Three? Oh my gosh, I missed one.
Yeah.
See, this is how long.
He's a month old.
Okay. Well, they don't feel too bad then.
Yeah.
Three boys. So basically you have a forward line then. So that's a good sign then to start with. Are the older two, are they at a stage now where they can, you know, are they skating a little bit or on the ice? Do they have a sense of what it is you do and all those kinds of things? And that really is a change for that whole Caps team. Like, and I think of Alex Ovechkin and Nick Backstrom and the guys that you grew up with that in that organization, you all have families of a certain age. And I wonder what that's been like and what it's been like with now with three boys in the house.
Yeah, I think my oldest is five and he's skating now and starting to kind of get his feet under him and do all that sort of thing. So that's kind of cool for me to be a part of in some way, but also just to enjoy with him, watching him. And he's kind of the only one that would have a chance of knowing what I do. I think, for the past year or two, he's been saying, you know, my dad plays hockey, but I don't know if he really understands, what that is yet, to be honest. But I think this year he might have a chance to understand that this is a job for me and not just a game like he does, every two times a week, like he's doing right now. So, but it is special for me to still involve them in experiences and all that sort of thing. But I think, the gushy stuff for a kid might come a little bit later.
Good stuff. And you know what, I'm going to let you go, John. And since I can not know without looking, and it would be cheating for me to look at the four new divisional names, I'm not even going to put you on the spot. And so I'll let you off the hook on divisional quiz. But
I knew I liked you.
Well, it wouldn't be fair because I was thinking in my head, could I name all four of them right now without going back to Twitter? And I'm not sure I could. But I want to thank you for coming in and hanging out with us and chatting. It's always great to catch up with you. And I hope that we'll cross paths in person before this interesting 2020-21 season gets done. But thanks for coming to hang out with us. It's always a treat.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. Good talking to you.
All right, my friend, I want to circle back with you. John Carlson chat, a little Zdeno Chara, Washington Capitals chat. We are going to take a break.
You should have got John back on the phone today. He'd probably be even more excited.
I know, we traded texts, so.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I don't know if you remember this, but at the beginning of the 2019-20 season, which was about 120 years ago, I actually went to Tampa and spent some time during the Washington Capitals' dad's trip. And it was at a time when John Carlson was really, you know, he was, people weren't just talking possible Norris Trophy. They were talking about the Hart Trophy because his point totals were so off the charts. He was top four or five or five or six in NHL scoring overall at that point. And he and his dad and I had a coffee across from the team hotel. And, you know, it's just, it wasn't the first time I met John's dad, but it was great to catch up with him and his dad and you know, talk about the evolution of that Caps team. And of course, the season didn't finish the way that I don't think John Carlson imagined it would, certainly not the way the Caps felt it would, as they ended up making a coaching change and bringing in Peter Laviolette, as we've discussed with John. When I look at that East division and where the Caps fit in, I mean, it's been a really weird offseason for them, right? I mean, Henrik Lundqvist was supposed to be the guy to push Ilya Samsonov in goal, and that's not going to happen because of Lundqvist's heart issues. And then they shockingly sign, you know, future Hall of Famers Zdeno Chara to come down the pipe. And I wonder what you, when you look at that team and how they fit into that division, what do you make of the Caps right now?
Yeah, so let's start with going back to what you were mentioning about Carlson. I was thinking he ended up not winning the Norris, of course, Roman Josi winning last year. And you know, John Carlson, first of all, I always think back of the time that he actually briefly hit free agency after they won the Cup. Remember that?
Yeah.
I mean, it was a bit fake because the Caps were pretty far down the extension talks with his agent, Rick Curran, but technically did not sign until after the market opened, if you remember. Or very close.
I do.
But he may have signed just before the, I can't remember now. No, you know what it was? Other teams were allowed to talk to him during the UFA speaking period, but he did sign before July 1st. That's right, because it was an 8x8. But what I remember is A, how close that got, and B, what a good deal it already looks like. Or, you know, we'll see at the end of it, I guess, with 8-year deals. But $8 million a year for a guy putting up his production at that position, are, you know, like he took a giant step after signing it. So, you know, it's also a deal that's been brought up in a lot of conversations. I mean, I think the Blues pointed that deal early in their talks with Alex Pietrangelo, and obviously ended up getting more down the road in Vegas. But here's the thing about John Carlson, and very nice of him to join you on our podcast. Sorry I wasn't around yesterday when you taped that. I don't know if he's going to win a Norris Trophy. Like, I feel like last season was his best shot.
Yeah.
And I say that, and it's not a criticism at all of his play, but I just think that at some point, if Seth Jones continues to arc the way he is, he's going to get one. Miro Heiskanen, like, oh my goodness. Yeah. Is he going to win multiple? Cale Makar.
Yep.
Quinn Hughes. And is Victor Hedman done winning them? Victor Hedman was, you know, best player in the playoffs. So I don't know how John Carlson gets back. When you consider those factors, how does he get back in that mix, do you think?
Yeah. It's a great question. And it's, I mean, so interesting. You know, the Caps, you know, Brian McClellan's been, you know, he's not the GM in Washington, of course, you know, has not been afraid to, you know, I mean, they won a Cup in 18. People, you know, had sort of not written them off, right? But they weren't a Cup. They weren't at your top of the list. And they win the Cup in 18, first ever for the franchise. And
well, we were just worried that they'd be drunk all year. That's the only thing.
Well, and then, you know, but they, you know, they, you know, Barry Trotz goes to the New York Islanders 2 years in a row with Todd Reirden. You know, they lose in double overtime in Game 7 against the Canes in 19. And then, man, that was not a really pretty performance by the Caps against the Islanders in bubble playoff. But once they got through the round robin, that was not a good performance for them. And so I think Peter Laviolette, his arrival in Washington comes at such a critical time for this team. And it's interesting because you wrote about the crop of free agents potentially hitting the market in the offseason of 21. And one of them is, of course, the captain of the Caps, Alex Ovechkin, and continues to negotiate his own deal. I see he was talking to at training camp. Not too stressed about it. The Caps have this weird thing going on, right? Like, you know, Nick Backstrom does his own deal with Brian McClellan. Ovi's going to do the same thing. But it is a bit of a trite thing because we always say it. But I think the window is, you have to ask yourself, what is the window for that Caps team to win again? I think it's just fair to ask. And John Carlson's such a huge part of that. And I think Zdeno Chara is going to be a really important piece to that. And John alluded to that. I think he's going to be really important there. Do you think so?
Well,
or not?
Just tremendous. And I had a brief chat with Caps GM Brian McClellan because I, talked about Ovechkin in that piece that I wrote. And listen, I think it's a no-brainer that Ovechkin is going to sign. But before and talks are slated to resume here once, I think sooner rather than later. So I think they'll get that done at some point. But before but certainly I think there were a couple of things that probably, all McClellan would say to me is that they had some interesting conversations last year. And I take that to mean two things, Scotty. One is that I think Alex Ovechkin had to figure out, because we always wondered, would he go back and play in the KHL before his career was over? Which, by the way, he may still, even if he signs an extension with the Caps, right?
Sure.
But I think they had to know where his heart was and where his mind was in terms of his NHL career. And I think it seems clear that Ovechkin's let them know he wants to continue playing in the NHL with him. So that was an important conversation to have. But probably the second part of that conversation, if I had to read through the lines after talking to Brian, is that, what does Alex think of where the Caps are headed, to your point, Scotty?
Yeah.
Are they still going to be, banging at the door? And so I think that was part of their conversations as well. But it is interesting, Nick Backstrom, who did his own deal, was on a Zoom call with local media this week and joked that he offered to Ovechkin to help negotiate his deal, a cut. All kidding aside, and I'm not trying to create controversy here, but it's interesting. I mean, Backstrom signed for, I don't have it in front of me, but I think $9.2 million a year is extension, which was kicks in now.
I'm going to look.
9.2? Yeah, 9.2.
Okay.
Yeah. And that was a pre-COVID extension. I mean, he signed that extension last year in the new year at some point. And, Alex Ovechkin, the face of the franchise, the greatest goal scorer of the NHL modern era, is going to have to sign a post-COVID extension. And I'm not suggesting for a second he's going to take less than Backstrom. I don't think he will, but those are different market circumstances, aren't they? That the center and the winger end up representing themselves in conversation. So that's kind of interesting to me.
Well, and I'm just looking it up here because I want to have the right number. I mean, the one thing that cannot be ignored is that Alex Ovechkin turned 35 in September. So at the start of his next, whatever deal it is, he's going to be
next fall,
he's going to be 36 years old. So
yeah, so term will be huge too, obviously. Yeah. For sure.
Okay,
but let's just be clear. Alex Ovechkin isn't hitting NHL free agency, I don't think. I think it's pretty clear that. And to me, it was always a question of the Caps or the KHL, not other NHL teams, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was always my read on it.
Well, and I always, having spent a fair amount of time around that team over the years and spent some time with Alex Ovechkin. In fact, because most of my stories are about me, of course, one of my favorite nights was a night I went bowling with the Ovi and the Russians and this family that had bought a night, at a charity auction event. And I went bowling with Ovi and the guys in Washington one night, and it was outstanding. He's just, we talk about the face of the franchise, but it was outstanding. I sort of always imagined that at some point Ovechkin's going to get to that Nick Lidstrom status, right? Or position where you're right. He's not going to play anywhere else. Maybe he just signs 1 year deal after 1 year deal. They pick a number. And when he gets, whenever it happens, like when he catches Gretzky, if that's still on the table, if the Caps become a team that, they go the way of the LA Kings or Detroit Red Wings or, any of the dynastic teams we've seen, Chicago Blackhawks, then maybe he moves on. But I'm with you. It's, it's hard to imagine him playing in another jersey. But having said that, it's hard to imagine Henrik Lundqvist pulling on a Caps jersey. It's going
or,
to look...
Or Zdeno Chara.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, so. But I don't think it happens with Ovechkin. But it's too bad. I mean, obviously, our best wishes to Henrik. Best wishes to Henrik Lundqvist. So sad the way that's worked out, because I got to tell you, the Caps were so excited about his fit and what he would have brought to the Caps. And so that's certainly a lingering question, is how does the goaltending hold up? Does Samsonov take this over and doesn't look back, or does he have hiccups? I mean, that's an issue. This isn't a transition year for the Washington Capitals. This is, we're trying to kick the window still open, right? So that's really the big storyline for Washington this year. I should mention, you mentioned Pierre Laviolette. We need to put a final point on this. We talked about it back in the spring when it happened, or whenever it happened, September, I guess, August, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know, whatever.
you know, I think he's the tonic that they need. I think he's going to bring, you know, there's going to be, you know, you're going to have to answer to Pierre Laviolette, and I think it's what Brian McClellan wanted for that team to wake up and turn the page in 2018 and put their work boots back on. I will tell you that as time has gone on, I've had a few snippets sort of thrown at me, and you know, Brian McClellan did meet. I mean, we reported at the time that he interviewed Mike Babcock. I think he went and met with Mike Babcock, and I just got to tell you how fascinating that would have been. To have brought him in, and I think also would have been a pretty good tonic. And I know that there are still people uneasy with how it ended in Toronto and the Mitch Marner story. And I get that. And at some point in time, you know, we'll have to talk to Mike about that. But I got to tell you, he's still a great coach. And that would have been, I mean, it fascinates me that Brian McClellan went down that road. And I think gave it some pretty serious thought, quite frankly.
Yeah, well, and I think that speaks to what you just pointed out with Peter being there, is that, you know, the need to change, I don't want to say culture, that's an overused word, but to have a different kind of voice. And, you know, Peter Laviolette has, you know, he's a winner, a Stanley Cup winner, Stanley Cup finalists in multiple cities. He's has done it, right? So coaches are hired to get fired. This isn't a 10-year project for Peter Laviolette.
No, exactly.
Yeah. So,
and this was why, what I love about what Brian McClellan did here, he didn't dwell on what was obviously a mistake. Didn't work with Todd Reardon. Worth a shot. And by the way, Todd Reardon one day may come back and learn from this and be a pretty good head coach, right?
Agreed. I agree.
But I love a GM that's able to say, you know what? Didn't work. That's on me. Let's, you know, I'm not taking any chances. So he interviewed Laviolette. He interviewed Gerald Gallant, would have been terrific as well. And he interviewed Mike Babcock. What does that tell you about his three interviews?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No,
I mean, he wasn't messing around this time.
So we're going to take a break here in just a second, but I can't wait for all of this, right? The new divisions. I love the Canadian division. So you've got Zdeno Chara is going to play 8 times against his former pals in Boston. And you've got Todd Reardon, now an assistant coach, back in Pittsburgh, where he cut his teeth. He won a Stanley Cup before joining Barry Trotz's staff and winning another Stanley Cup in Washington. Now he's back in that Mike Sullivan staff, as the Penguins try and sort of pick up the pieces after a couple of awful springs. You've still got Barry Trotz with the Islanders. The drama, yeah, I don't care. I like the idea. You're playing 8 times. I want to see games 6, 7, and 8 between Boston and Washington. and given the competitive nature, I mean, there are 2 or 3 really good teams with legitimate cup aspirations in that division that will not make the playoffs. And it's going to be a ton of fun. So I have
agree.
All right. So you should know, we talk about this, you know, it's Two Man Advantage, the podcast. That's why else would you be listening to it? We are making it, we're transitioning 21. It's all about change, my friend. And so we're still going to have the Two Man Advantage podcast. at The Athletic and on Apple, Spotify, and wherever else you get your podcasts. But starting next week, Two Man Advantage will continue, and you have to access it via the new The Athletic Hockey Show feed. So you make sure that you subscribe. You can still find it. It's going to be easy. But one of the great things is that our pal Ian Mendez is going to do a lot of podcast work under the umbrella of The Athletic.
Yeah, great to have Ian on board at The Athletic. Yes. Yeah, what a hire.
I know. He's awesome. It's really good stuff. All right. What else you got on your mind? I got to tell you, I'm still trying to get my head around Pierre-Luc Dubois signing his 2-year deal with the Columbus Blue Jackets.
I was a bit busy with that story during
Well, that's part of the reason that I ended up chatting with John Carlson on my own. But you were there, and you wrote about this, and I just think it's so fascinating because, you know, we have two, and you tied it together nicely, I thought. But this whole issue of okay, well, what is the future of Patrick Laine with the Winnipeg Jets? I loved his commentary, right? You just feel him squirming when he's answering the questions in one of his first media Zoom calls with reporters at the Jets camp. And basically, I'm here and we'll see what happens after this season. And of course, Dubois, what a talent. I just thought he was, I couldn't get enough of the Blue Jackets in the playoffs. That series against Toronto was compelling. And even though it was only 5 games, that series against Tampa in the first real round, outstanding. And I thought Dubois really emerged as he's a beast. And I just think the sky's the limit for him. But is the sky going to be the limit for him in Columbus? And Jarmo Kekalainen's got a couple of years to figure things out. But it's interesting. And I wonder if you know, just sort of adds a little spice on in both those markets as we head into this 56-game, 21 season.
Yeah, one of the biggest stories of the year was to see how those two situations play out. And there seemed to be some confusion among some, and I guess that's why I felt the need to write that piece, that because Laine wasn't traded in the offseason after, you know, his agents, Andy Scott and Mike Liu, put out that statement to me, as you remember, Scotty, in October, of maybe, you know, that might be mutually beneficial to part ways. There seemed to be this, I don't know, some people thinking, well, it didn't happen, so I guess he's staying. Well, nothing's changed. I mean, that's still how his camp feels, and obviously how Laine feels, and maybe how the Jets feel, by the way. So, you know, let's see where this goes. But you know, I credit Laine and Dubois in back-to-back days for in their media availabilities not trying to, I mean, you know, not denying anything. Now, they didn't come out and say, I want to be traded, but they did not try to distance themselves from what is their potential exit, right? I mean, that was, I thought both guys stick handled looked pretty well in their media availabilities. In other words, yeah, you know, it's all true. So, and so where do you go from here? And that's why I wrote about it Monday, because it's, I mean, every front office person I talk to around the NHL, they want to talk about Dubois and Laine, especially Dubois, because that's the more recent story.
Yeah.
You know, 23-year-old top centers, two-way physical monsters like Pierre-Luc Dubois don't grow on trees. So the demand for him will be through the roof. And I think what I think is happening is there are teams that don't want to call Jarmo Kekalainen right away because they know he's probably seething right now. So they want that to die down. But I mean, he's going to get a million offers. I think that Columbus will get more offers than the Jets will for Laine. And that's not a slight to Laine. I mean, Laine could score the most goals in the NHL over the next 10 years. But I think it's the whole center versus winger thing. And
for sure.
And the fact that if you're trading for Dubois now, at least there's this year, next year on his bridge deal, Laine needs a new deal right after this year. So I know that some of the teams that have looked at Laine, and as I've reported, you know, teams like Columbus, ironically, Philadelphia, Carolina are among the teams that had reached out to Winnipeg in the fall just to gauge that situation. But any team trading for Laine, they got to know what it costs to keep him around, right? And so that's a big part of all this. And I don't know that either trade, if they do get, you know, if both players, you know, get their wish, I don't know that it necessarily has to happen this season, right? I mean, you know, depending on when each GM, Jarmo Kekalainen and Columbus Kevin Cheveley off in Winnipeg feels that he's got his best deal on the table, it could really wait till the summer at the draft, yeah, when often the best trades are made. So, you know, we'll see how this plays out. I mean, you know, if one of those two teams falls out of it, does the April 12th trade deadline come into focus? So really interesting. You just don't see these types of young studs available often, and there happen to be two of them that could be dealt.
Yeah. Well, and I think you hit the nail on the head. Obviously with Columbus, Jarmo Kekalainen has a lot more runway than Kevin Cheveldayoff does in Winnipeg, right? It's just, you know, given the contractual status. And I think you're right. Like, to me, I look at Columbus, they're a team that's going to be in that, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 hole in that new Central Division. You know, like, I think they're a playoff team. I think the changes they've made there, I think Max Domi is going to thrive there. Their goaltending is terrific. You mentioned Seth Jones. He's my preseason pick to win the Norris. Winnipeg's a little bit different, though, right? And a lot of people like them, maybe almost by default, to be sixth in that North or the Canadian division. But I talked to an NHL executive this week, and he's like, wait a minute, you know, like, let's not just cast the Winnipeg Jets into that position, given they have the defending Vezina Trophy winner and Connor Hellebuyck. They have as deep and dynamic a forward group as most teams up front. Yes, the defenses, you know, had to be retooled over the last year or year and a half, but that's still a team that I think is very much going to be in the playoff hunt. And to your point on the trade deadline, if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff, I don't know, you're right. You make the deal the time that it needs to be made. But if you can make, if you're in the hunt for one of those four playoff spots, man, then like you say, you roll the dice and see what happens at the draft. But yeah, it's going
to
be fascinating.
Yeah, well, the only thing I guess that you have to, to monitor is what is it doing? And Columbus has some experience in this, unfortunately, but what is it doing inside your room to have someone you know who wants out, right? I mean, that's an intangible that you can't ignore. So, it's a tough position to be in for the Jackets, but there you go.
Yeah. All right. Anything else? New Year. I'll turn over a new leaf. I'll give you you got a last final thought. A week from, we're taping this on a Wednesday morning. A week from today, I think there are 5 games to kick things off. Got a triple header here in the U.S. on television. We've already got scoped out the games. We got the Philly, Pittsburgh, Tampa, Chicago. Oh, it's going to be great. So, final thoughts with a week from today, the start of the season.
Yeah, I think that to your point about Winnipeg and the Canadian division, and I'm not going to name the corporate names for the divisions. I just want to warn you ahead of time.
I was going to ask you.
But the All-Canadian division, you know, I agree. Like, I did a poll a month ago, but I don't know when I did it, of executives around the league about the Canadian division. And the Leafs certainly want out, which I agree with. I think this, you know, they've got everything going right now. But after that, and I think it was Montreal 2 and Calgary 3, if you aggregated the 15 responses I got. But to be honest with me, and the Habs are very, very much improved, but I think I honestly think outside of Ottawa, would any combination of the standings shock you with the 6 other Canadian teams? I mean, if you think about injuries and different things, I mean, wouldn't. I just think it's that close. And I think that's going to be absolutely fascinating. I mean, it'll be telling from some of the Canadian media narrative, and I'm part of that. Even though we cover the whole league as national writers, I think the All-Canadian division will take up a lot of oxygen this season. and it's just going to be, I think, going to overshadow a lot of what's going on around the league, unfortunately. But I think it's inescapable. I mean, it's such a unique, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
There's no way, it makes no sense cost-wise and logistically, and certainly with Seattle coming in to bring the league to 32 teams next fall, all things being equal. I mean, there's no way to keep a Canadian division, right? It just doesn't work. Or do you think at the end of this, there's like, oh my gosh, this was so much fun, so much interest, the ratings were through the roof, or whatever it is, that somehow, you know, that people sort of take another look at, could you do this? And you'd have to throw in one American team somewhere along the line. But do you think this starts something that we may not have been able to foresee were it not for, you know, what the league's had to contend with COVID-19 and redoing the divisions?
Yeah, you know, the thing that I think will be interesting to monitor is whether people enjoy the baseball-type scheduling. You know, and this is something Jonathan Toews has talked about in the past, remember?
Yep. I think our talked with our boys. Colin
Lazarus wrote about it, yeah.
Yep.
And whether, you know, the idea of cutting down on travel and you know, and so on, you know, could the baseball-type scheduling have some kind of impact past this season? That would be the thing I would wonder about. I know that in general, TV networks don't like it. Marketing people don't love it. They like to keep spicing it up. But that would be, from a logistical, financial, and practical point of view, that might be something that even maybe the PA, on behalf of the players, push for past this year, if they like it. I mean, you don't know yet. Let's have the season first, right? As far as the divisions, I don't see the practicality of keeping the Canadian teams together. You know, that travel wise alone, I think that, you know, I think that it's not very practical, but we'll see. I mean, it may generate the kind of interest that the NHL has to look back and say, oh boy, that was, you know, maybe we need to look at this. You know, and it would guarantee, obviously, a Canadian team in the Final Four every year. And I don't know how I feel about that. I think that going back to natural divisions that are more geographically based, I think makes more sense to me.
Yeah. Well, a lot of road to travel before we get to that point. Here is to a safe and seamless road. I don't know how it's going to unfold, but we're going to start to find out next week. And as we talked about earlier in the podcast, things are going to change for the Athletics Podcast Network and specifically the Hockey Group. And beginning on January 11th, The Athletic debuts the new The Athletic Hockey Show podcast. Ian Mendez is going to lead that. He's going to be joined by Haley Sullivan. And, you know, Haley's gone, you know, she covered the Sens so beautifully for us, and now she's out in Calgary. Ian slid into coverage of the Senators and plus his podcast duties. Sean McIndoe, Down Goes Brown, is going to be part of the podcast crew on Thursdays.
Funny man.
Maybe you and
Funny man.
Yes,
remember that steak dinner we had with him in New York?
Yes, I do. Yeah. I'm trying to think whether are you trying to trick me? Yeah, I guess we did.
No, I'm not. That was back in our ESPN days.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. I do sort of remember that. Anyway, and of course, as we mentioned, the two-man advantage still coming to you on Wednesdays. What else we got on the docket here as we get ready for the start of the season? Blue Jackets captain Nick Foligno and his wife Janelle are Craig Custance's guests this week on the Full 60 at the Athletic. Remember, we had Nick on just before return to play. It's just,
yeah, he was great.
He's unbelievable. He's unbelievable. And Tyler Spurgeon, the brother of Minnesota Wild captain Jared Spurgeon, the new Minnesota Wild captain, by the way, joins Mike Russo this week on Straight from the Source at the Athletic. You should check out our comments section for each podcast episode at the Athletic app and rate and subscribe to Two Man Advantage on Apple. And if you aren't already a subscriber, go to theathletic.com/twomanadvantage and receive a subscription for just $3.99 per month. That's like, how much does a Tim's cost now? If you get a big Tim's, if you bought me a Tim's, could you do two of them for $3.99? I bet you could.
I don't know. Numbers are not my friend.
You're not a Tim's guy anyway. I should have said Starbucks or whatever. All right.
Muskoka All right, coffee, my friend. Man. So, I'm a Muskoka coffee guy.
You know what? I remember. I like that Muskoka coffee. You have it up at your cottage. I've made myself a cup or two. All right. Anyway, good work, my friend. Next week, we will be hours away from the start of a new season with a new format for the hockey podcast group at The Athletic. It's going to be a good time. So good work by you today.
Right on, right on.